arts guild. Visit our gallery's arts festival and take in a performance at our theater featuring a full season of dramas, comedies, and musicals. The guild's gift shop showcases unique art from over 100 local and regional member artists. Come enjoy music from the Cannon Valley Regional Orchestra or the 411 Concert Series. We invite you to explore your creativity in one of our classes. All are welcome at the Northfield Arts Guild. To learn how you can be a part, visit northfieldartsguild.org or call 507-645-8877.
Art Zany, radio for the imagination, with your host Paula Granquist, is brought to you by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts. And now, Art Zany, radio for the imagination.
Good morning. This is Paula Granquist, and you're tuned in to Art Zany, radio for the imagination. Thanks for listening to the show. Today, we are going to wake up our imagination, and I hope we're going to celebrate some possibilities. I really appreciate that you're tuned in. I'm going to start off telling a story that I don't think I've talked about before on the air, because I have talked about my love of words and language, and I absolutely adored learning new things about words, and I always wished I could read the whole dictionary. That was one of my dreams as a kid, kind of a goofy kid I was. I see some nods. Good. I'm glad to hear that, because I wanted to know, well, what does this mean, and are there alternate definitions? I wanted to learn pronunciation, usage, related words, synonyms, histories. It was all like this big, you know, a deep and winding road. It was fascinating to me how 26 letters could have this profound effect and this amazing way of us being together in the world. It seemed like maybe a little bit of a secret code, a puzzle that I had to solve, and it was definitely a journey through knowledge, and I loved it. And then in seventh grade, we learned how to diagram sentences, and I was like, yes, this is an amazing world. And I have to think now, I wonder if they even teach that anymore, if that's something that people do. Now, I wasn't really great at it, but I still loved it because it was like mapping sentences. It was like creating math out of grammar, which I also loved math. I loved the logic of it. Felt like this was the key to the kingdom. And the practice created pictures of these word combinations, and it felt like art to me. And this isn't what happened, though. Everyone else in the class protested. They hated it. They worked hard to make life difficult for our very young English teacher. She cried many days. It was not a really good experience, at least for she and I. But there was, in that classroom, I think at that moment, a place where things separated for me. It's like that what I loved wasn't what other people loved. And I started realizing that I was a little bit on my own pathway, that we didn't speak the same language anymore. That what I found enlightening, they found frustrating, boring, nonsense. And I started to try to figure out who I was in this middle school world and who I would become in the outside world. And the certainty of that world seemed even less knowable. And I realized that at that point, I learned that there's so many changes coming, that things just keep changing and changing, and we keep having to be flexible. And it was also about 1978 when this was happening, and I remember the changes happening in the political world and the moms in the neighborhood getting together, going to ERA meetings and talking. I don't know if they actually ever did this. Mom, I'm sorry if I bring this up. I wonder if they ever burned their bras. I don't know. My mom particularly, or her friends, but we'll talk about that today. So today we're going to talk about, you know, and no better time amidst all the turmoil, changes, opening, closing of the world, to come together with art and to have art try to help us understand the logic and motion and beauty of the changes unfolding at this time. And I'm pretty darn excited about what's happening in our world. I think there's a lot of possibilities. So I hope you see that too. So in the Art Zany radio studio. Boy, I combined those words. I've never done that before. I am going to be joined by playwright Christine Coleman and actors Felicia Crosby, Ellie Warren, and Noah Letcher. I hope I got that last name right, Noah. Did I?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's German.
It's German. I wondered if you pronounced it two syllables or one. So
yeah.
Wonderful. And they're going to talk about the new play, Women March on Washington, presented by the Northfield Arts Guild Lab Theater Series. It opens for one weekend, next Saturday, April 14th, and Sunday, April 15th. So we'll give you some more details about that. It is all about that nation, women marching and women's ideas through history and through real characters and fictional characters about what it means to have equal rights. So I'd love for each of you to introduce yourselves and tell us a little about your, if you've ever experienced diagramming sentences, maybe if there was a moment where you felt like the world suddenly changed and there was all these new possibilities that existed. Let's start right down here with Allie down on the end. Welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm Ellie Warren. I am a sophomore in high school, and I don't know.
That's fine. That's all you need to do. You just tell. And are you at Northfield High School?
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that you got to come here and be here, even though it's a school day. Thank you, teachers, for that. And tell us, have you ever do they teach diagramming sentences?
Not by that name.
Oh.
I think you would have to explain to me what diagramming sentences was for me to get what it is.
Okay.
Because we've never learned diagramming sentences under the name diagramming sentences. We've learned, like, sentence construction and, like, different sorts of literary devices, but we haven't ever learned sentence diagramming.
Yeah, it's almost like creating a visual map of how words are related within the sentence and how they connect and where the verb is and who's what modifies what. You create these little tails and lines and circles, and it's beautiful. So everybody should look it up. I don't know. I'm fascinated by it. And thank you so much for being here. I think this is your first visit to the studio.
Yes.
I'm pleased to have you here today.
Thanks.
And also joining us is Anoa, and I've just flipped the page, so I forgot your last name.
Letcher.
Yes, welcome to the studio.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm a sophomore at St. Olaf College right now, so 4 years away from Ellie. And I've never actually, like, I think in eighth grade there was a small section of time where they tried to make us, like, diagram, be like, this is the verb, this is the noun, this is, like, how it's modifying things. And I've actually kind of re-encountered that briefly with deconstructive criticism in my English class,
which
is really cool because everything's, like, sign, signifier, and then, like, what is signified. So, like, rose, you have, like, the actual looking at it versus, like, the word, and, like, language is so weird because, like, when I say rose, sometimes you think either, like, usually people will think, like, a red rose, like, just, but then, like, if you say red rose, you are explicitly specifying that you mean a red rose, and just the fact that, like, just saying rose has multiple different meanings because depending on what color you think it is. Yeah, and I...
Whoa, and that's why I didn't major in English, I think.
Because
it kind of takes the magic out of storytelling.
Yeah, but it also, like, just reading, the, like, random things now, it's like, oh, like, what are you trying, like, knowing that, like, something could mean something different than what you thought it originally meant because of just, like... realizing that they could have been thinking of a pink rose the entire time. But
in your mind, you had red.
Yeah.
That part I do think is fascinating.
Yeah. And should I introduce what my character?
We'll get to that in a sec, yeah.
Cool. I'll wait on that then.
Thank you so much for being here. It's really exciting. This is your first visit as well. So
yeah.
I'm very appreciative that you took the time to be here.
I've done some stuff on Kate's show, but that's literally it.
Oh, good. And also, Christine Coleman is here. You are the playwright. Go ahead and tip the mic down so you can be comfortable with, and scoot it over. Yeah, that's
hey,
I want you to be comfortable. Thank you for coming, and welcome back.
Thank you for inviting us.
Of course. And I don't know, you're closer to my age, I think.
Yeah, so, yes, I did learn sentence diagramming, and it was called that. But my teacher, Miss Fowler, very old school teacher, she did not cry, but she could sometimes make us cry. So that tells you a little bit about what that class was like. And
yeah.
We all learned how to diagram a sentence.
Yeah. And you've been involved with the Northfield Arts Guild Theater and other theaters and as a playwright for a long time. So people may know your name. Mm-hmm. Give us an update on some of the things that you've been working on. You know, maybe just a little bit about this play.
Yeah. Well, I have been working on this play, this project, for about a year. And I wrote a grant through the Southeastern Minnesota Arts Council, which is funded through the state legislature, through everyone's tax dollars. And I received the grant to work on this project, Women March on Washington. So I described a project, and one of the parts of the individual artist grant is to have a capstone project that is a public event. So people of the state of Minnesota are supporting, through their tax dollars, projects not just of writers and playwrights, but all kinds of artists. And so it's important then for people to be able to participate then in these projects. And so I chose to do a reading of my play because, you know, when you write the play, you're not really sure exactly what point it's going to be at when a year from then.
Right.
So a reading is always a good thing. It's a good step in a project. It's the first time it's been heard, either in public or even just read in a room. And so it's wonderful to have these actors and other people supporting me, like the Arts Guild and the Lab Program, to support this project happening.
And it's what I think is so important in the world is the artists are the ones that are going to teach us about other people's experience, with what's going on, and maybe help shape the future. I truly believe that, and so it's really exciting to have you work on this. We've got one other guest in the studio because we've got a packed house today, and I want to be sure and have Felicia introduce herself. So you've been on the show before, and I thank you again for coming back.
Hi, Paula.
Hi.
Yes, I have. I had the great good fortune to have been in a number of Arts Guild plays, and through that, I have been able to be on this show. And we're about roughly the same mm-hmm. age, and I, too, sentence diagrammed when I was in school.
So I think we're learning that maybe it's not taught.
Well, here's the thing, though. Here's the thing is that you hit on it when you talked about, like, the logic and the math component and everything else, and I realized that's what it was that I hated about it.
Oh.
Yeah, I was always very math phobic, which actually we can get into a huge conversation about culture and math, and especially women of our generation being kind of turned away from math because it wasn't considered feminine and so on and so forth. I think no matter when I had been born, I would never have been a physicist. So I can't blame it all on sexism and culture.
Yes, exactly. It's deep when you start exploring some
of
those.
It's a lack of ability on my part.
Well, there are different ways of our brains functioning in the world.
And absolutely.
And everybody has to find their pathway. And you are such a brilliant actress.
Well,
and so
thank you.
Up the stage, and it's wonderful to see
that.
What you do. How did you get connected with Women March on Washington?
I think just the general Arts Guild community. You know, we're always paying attention to what's coming up. And when I heard that Christine was doing this, I was just so excited. And this is such a magnificent script, and she has done such an excellent job. And I really think that it's entertaining, which, of course, art needs to be as well. It's illuminating. It's profound. It's funny. And it really kind of shows the continuum. It's the Women's March was not a single event.
I think that's what people, when they hear us say the phrase Women March on Washington, they might think, oh, they're talking about, January, gosh, I've lost track,
2017, yeah.
Which is the most recent. But it does, Christine, you did echo through history some of the different, there's three years that you specifically highlighted, 1913, 1978, and 2017. So tell us how you made the decision to include, all three of those components or time periods.
Well, maybe I was a little crazy because that's a lot of time periods to cover.
In one play.
But I did have a whole year. And so, I attended the St. Paul March. I unfortunately did not get to go to Washington. And so I was very tuned in and wanting to just give women's voices a chance to be heard. And so, I've written down on paper these words that I have kind of taken from a lot of different sources. I don't know. One of the things I'm working on is how authentic are these lines actors, create actors I have for this project are going to help me to figure that out and help me with that. But it was very interesting to me to think about marching in the different eras and how we got to where we are. And so I really have, and I love history too. I know, Felicia, you said that. And so for me, it's very fascinating to go back and hear about the early march. And then the 1977-78, I wrote about those years. I was living during that era. So that was interesting to write about. And so it kind of brought me back then around to the current with kind of new eyes, I think, and hoping that other people might get that by going through that process.
Yeah, I think that's true, that there's adding that depth of those different women from different, you know, eras, using their voices, using their actions, trying to convey a message and trying to understand how that is a building, you know, part block of today is, I think, important. It's essential. And so this play, Women March on Washington, is a full-length stage play. It's going to be a reading, and so I want to make sure that our listeners know what that means, because it's part of the Northfield Arts Guild Lab Theater Series. So it's an opportunity for, and maybe you can explain a little too, just some different ways of presenting plays, different kinds of plays, different, just I don't want to say experimental, because that's not quite what the lab series is, because it could be classic too, but just a new way for productions to be presented.
Part of the process, I think.
Go ahead.
Like what a sketch is to kind of a finished drawing, you know, a reading is to a finished play.
Oh, that's
and
a really good...
If you look at any of, say, Rembrandt's sketches, you know, I mean, they're extraordinary and they're beautiful, but they were part of the process that got him to his painting, and I think that's similar.
That's
so
a beautiful
I'm
way.
I'm going to compare you to Rembrandt.
Well, how about, why don't we have one of Noah or Ellie talk about what it means to be in a reading? Because I think both of you have been on stage before.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so this is not a traditional role. So which one of you wants to jump in?
I'll go first.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Ellie.
So, like, I have a background in theater. I've been doing theater for quite a while. And mainly, the main difference in with a reading is that there's not as many props, and there's not as much blocking, so there's not as much movement on the stage, but what that allows for is that allows for the lines to oftentimes be delivered a lot more clearly and with a lot more meaning than they would have otherwise.
Mm. And so it's, maybe I'll have Noah jump in.
Yeah, it's definitely more about the lines rather than the actual whole, like, just putting on a spectacle and, like, having an actual full-length play with, like, you know, all of the tech with, like, sound design and lighting and, like, actual, like, costumes. It actually lets the words speak for themselves for a little bit rather than having everything happen at once and it being a full, like, full just, like, theater experience. You get to actually just hear what the play is and allow your imagination kind of almost like the way that a podcast does, that like you actually have to you just hear the people and maybe some other sounds, and that's all you're going to get of that world, and you have to imagine it in your head.
I like that comparison. That's a really good comparison.
I've been doing podcasting recently, so.
It's on your mind.
Yeah.
And Felicia, why don't we start with you to talk about your character in the production, and or you have multiple characters.
Actually, two characters with the same name. They're both called Florence, and Christine did that very intentionally. My first Florence and kind of the primary Florence is... part of the 1977-78 era. And it's funny because, you know, I was obviously alive then too and a kid. So it's amazing kind of coming back now with sort of an adult's vision and perspective or something as you're looking at these people. And she is someone who it would be easy perhaps to vilify now. She's against a number of things that we would consider women's rights.
Oh.
But she has a perspective and she has a point of view. And we have to remember that it's easy to look back at something with 20/20 hindsight and say this was right and this was done for the right reasons and so forth. But when you're in the middle of living through something, we don't always get the same messages, all of us. And the consequences aren't always going to be clear in terms of how things are going to fall out. And there were a lot of people who were afraid that things were going to be taken from them more than things were going to be granted to them. And
oh, that's a
so
fascinating.
She has some things to say. And, you know, it might be a little easier to dislike her, but I think it's important to listen to her because she has a point of view.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of the history. There,
absolutely.
I mean, that was it wasn't just all everybody agreed and
absolutely.
Off we went.
Women aren't a monolithic group like any other group in this world, you know. So we talk about even, you know, women's issues. Well, what does that mean? We're half the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then you also play another Florence.
Another Florence, yes. The Return of Florence. Yeah, and she is she's a contemporary character. It's a smaller role in an incredibly important scene where the characters are dealing with the subject of workplace harassment. So it's very, very topical, very Me Too.
Mm-hmm. And she has a different maybe viewpoint than the first
different
Florence.
Different viewpoint. You could look at her in some ways as if the first Florence had been born at a different time, you know, different circumstances. Maybe her, you know, you don't necessarily know what her viewpoints are as much, but it's easy to perhaps make some connections with the first Florence. You know, they might be able to have a conversation where they understand each other.
And that might be a generation thing. It might be
absolutely.
A grandma and a daughter. Or mother-daughter.
Yeah, exactly.
Fascinating to mm-hmm. think about. And thank you for bringing that to the stage. And let's hear about your character, Noah.
Yeah, so I play the only not woman-identifying character in the show. Cam is a genderqueer person who uses they-them pronouns, which... I was extremely excited about because that's an experience of mine. I don't identify as a woman. I identify as non-binary, and I use they-them pronouns. And so, like, actually having a role to embody on stage when I know that I'm going to, like, go eventually, like, into the theater world and have to deal with the fact that casting directors are still going to very much see, like, oh, you're either a man or you're a woman, mm. and, like, having to, like, deal with that. But now there's at least one role that I can say, like, I wasn't me, because, like, Cam is definitely not... Cam's a science teacher, and I'm not a science teacher.
But you do like math. You said that.
Sort of. Math is cool. I like statistics.
Mm.
And I do really enjoy science, but, like, it was just, like, having that chance... is so like just amazing.
And we might, for our audience, that might be a new term for people that they haven't heard genderqueer, and they aren't sure what that means or how that is, so define for our audience.
Yes,
I think that'd be an important part.
Genderqueer and non-binary mean more or less the same thing. It's just a difference on what somebody wants to label themselves with. And it basically means that they don't use he, him pronouns, so they don't identify as a man. And they don't use she, her pronouns, so they don't identify as a woman. Gender is very complicated, so there are exceptions even to that, like, quote-unquote rule. But the idea is that they reject the idea of the gender binary and kind of sit in this weird sort of, sometimes uncomfortable, sometimes, you know... invigorating gray area of just being more authentically themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was a good description. And I think it's a part
of
you would practice good. And I think that's an important part too. And really wonderful that, as you mentioned, Christine had included a character that has an identity that's different. It was interesting. You said the only,
as far as I know, I don't know specifically, like, whether, like, I can't, like, know necessarily in the, sense of just, I can't speak to these characters personally, so I don't know necessarily what they would decide if they were talking to me specifically about this subject, but as far as I know, all of the other characters identify with she, her pronouns and are women, yeah?
Yeah, I guess I didn't. Not all the characters are developed enough so that we know what their gender expression would be.
Okay. And so tell me about Cam's role then in the play. What is Cam's part in Women March on Washington?
Do you want to speak?
Go ahead, Christine.
Yeah.
We're still working on this.
Okay.
And I just want to say, first of all, that, you know, I as a playwright, I certainly cannot speak for all the people in my play, and it was scary to write for people, for characters that are unlike yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is the first time I had written for someone, a non-binary character, and there are people of different races and ethnicities, all, you know, different political viewpoints, obviously. And so I just want to say, you know, I'm really grateful for actors who are willing to jump on board with that, because it can be kind of tricky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, stepping in there, and you know, I don't want to assume that I know what this character would say. But I wanted to have Cam, this character who doesn't identify either as a man or a woman, because I thought it was important for us to think about, and one of the main themes in the play is how we is identity,
mm-hmm.
and how we decide who we can be, each one of us,
mm-hmm.
and who defines that, and our culture for sure. It's always throwing out these definitions of who we can be, and these labels and all these messages. The monologue that Noah performs in the play is, I think of it as kind of the heart of the play in a lot of ways, and it's right in the middle of the play also in the time frame of it, because I think it's really important to think about those things, because I think they're really important to how we then are able to create a place where we can have equal rights.
Mm.
We don't even know who we can be. We can't have equal rights.
It's such a powerful thing, and
yeah.
such a great time to present those ideas and to be, you know, include all viewpoints.
And I just like to, if I could just jump on that for just a second. I think one of the important things too that Christine is doing with this is that living in, at the risk of adding to, you know, academic here, but, you know, in a traditionally patriarchal society where we have all lived under the white, heterosexual, male gaze, and that's just how our society has been constructed for hundreds and, one could argue, thousands of years, depending on where you are in the world, everyone who is not in that, the top of that power structure politically and economically, who is not the white, heterosexual male, is being defined by them. And so to give a platform where it is the other gaze, where it is ourselves looking at ourselves and learning to define ourselves in a place that's not dangerous, in a place that's safe, in a place that you can fully explore who you are and know that who you authentically are is as good as who anybody else is. And I think that's one of the things that Christine has done with this play, and it's one of the, I feel it fully. I don't know about you guys, but I really feel like it's a very safe place when we're in there together. So
that's a really wonderful thing, and I think that will, you know, expand the idea of what's, you know, Women March on Washington, and you know, give us some new perspectives and some new ideas to take away. And I don't want to forget Ellie and her character over here.
Yeah, I'm playing Juliana, who is a trans woman. So I'm also in the same boat as knowing that that reflects on my own experiences as a trans girl. So,
mm.
yay.
That
and,
was a high five.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's radio.
And I think what's really good about this is that Christina's kind of managed to capture the kind of, just a kind of trans girl character that kind of echoes with me in a really nice way. And I really appreciate that.
And so, tell us what's your character's name again?
Juliana.
Juliana, and what is her role in which era does she come?
She is 2016.
Okay, so and tell me about her the character's take on this.
She is a insurance broker who holds liberal views and who is an activist for transgender rights. Yeah,
that must be great to be able to embody that on stage and take on that role and share. Both of you are just
it's because I know that we're working on it and it's going to get better, but we're still working on the whole, you know, writing more diverse roles that aren't male or female and just having to like we're getting there. It's
yes.
going to happen. I'll be part of that. But I got to get out of college first.
And I like that enthusiasm. And I think that that's, I'm very hopeful for the youth because of that ability to see people as people and to, you know, even my kids have had some experiences with learning what pronouns our children in elementary school are wanting to identify with. And I think that that's incredibly powerful. And they see that as that's just the way the world is. And I'm hopeful that that's the way the rest of the world can be, too.
Yeah.
I think that's so cool. So I applaud everybody. And for folks just tuning in, this is Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination. We are talking about Women March on Washington. And this is a Arts Guild Lab Theater Series production. It is a full play presented as a reading. And performances are Saturday the 14th at 7:30, Sunday the 15th at 2 p.m. That is at the Northfield Arts Guild Theater, and tickets are very reasonable, $5. I can't believe that. That's an incredible, you know, just to be able to hear voices and learn stories and, you know, really experience this play, like you said, like a powerful, live, energized podcast. But we do want to mention that there are adult themes, and so do you have ideas about age-appropriate level, Christine? What were you, when you put that on the ticket information, what were you thinking about?
I don't know if I would say an age. It's not necessarily language. I don't think there's would be problems with language so much. But the themes have having to do with sexual harassment, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Some things very deeply political things that. You know, I just think it's more probably something maybe middle school and up.
Mm-hmm. Right, just to get you giving people an idea that there are some intense topics that are presented.
Exactly.
And so
and probably great things for parents to talk with kids about.
Absolutely.
And so that, you know, could be something that they would want to do. But I just want people to be alerted to that.
And are tickets available now or at
yes.
The, so you can go to the NorthfieldArtsGuild.org website to get them in advance?
Yes.
Okay, because this one might be really popular. I think you may want to jump online and or you could even go down to the Arts Guild, I bet, and pick up your tickets.
You could.
And that would be very, very exciting. What are you hoping that audiences, you know, come and is there a discussion opportunity? It feels like one of those things where, gosh, after I see that, like a great movie, you want to have a cup of coffee or you want to have a conversation. So is there an opportunity within this reading production to do some of that?
Yeah, yes, I really do hope that people will talk about it informally. And there will be an audience discussion after one of the performances. I'm sorry that I can't tell you which one right now, but I think it probably will be the Saturday night one.
Okay. And we can, I'm sure there'll be updates on the website for that. So
yes.
People, if that's a primary interest for them, I think that's important for them to know because it does feel like one of those things where you know, each of us is going to bring different echoes of experience, different, you know, the ages are, you know, you mentioned that there's a large cast. We should talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
20 plus, is that right?
About that.
There will be 20 people on stage.
So a lot of different experiences coming to the stage.
And I wanted to say also, if I could, that there will be music.
Oh, please.
And I think that's an, you know, when we were talking about having a reading, I loved the way you guys described a reading because I think that was perfect. But I do know from past experience with readings that when the audience comes in and once starts to get into the show itself, they forget that they're at a reading. Often I've had people later that say, well, you know that play that you did. And I said, well, it was just a reading. They said, oh, I didn't remember. They didn't even remember that people were walking around with scripts in their hands.
Oh, that's something we didn't mention, too. People should expect to see the papers.
But
that,
you forget that right away.
Mm-hmm. And that's just because this hasn't been rehearsed as a you know traditional playwood where you add all of the element, the lighting, mm-hmm. this costumes, yeah. and all of that.
Yeah, and it's also so the playwright can keep making changes because it's never been performed. So maybe the actor says, this isn't really working here. This you know, I could, it would feel better if I could say it like this, or this is too, there's too much going on here. This is too slow in this part. Let's cut some of this out. And so that's kind of the, you know, that definitely is one of the main purposes of a reading. But I, you know, I like to give a little shape and color to a reading. And so I, with this one, I didn't choose to have everyone sitting through.
And that's another option,
through,
right?
You know, sometimes they are. So it's not going to be all people just sitting. There's a little bit of movement on stage. And then these people who are the characters from the contemporary period and are talking about whether or not they're going to the March on Washington, in the time periods of the other 1913 and 1978, they are marchers from those time periods. And so we have some songs. They're not, it's not music that I've written, but a couple of, well, three of them are old songs that might have been sung at, well, that were sung at protests. And one, a song by Holly Near. Some of you will know her name from, well, the 1970s. She is still writing and singing protest music. And so that's kind of fun, just mm-hmm. a little music thrown in there.
And that's good. That's a good way to set up expectations of, because readings can be all kinds of things, as you mentioned. And I bet this has been a powerful experience, you know, with 20 people in the cast, you know, different ages, colors, ethnicities, gender expressions. Have there been some great side conversations? Is there, has this been an experience where, you know, I would imagine it can open up eyes and, you know, create those opportunities, not only within the play to, you know, add to lines or, you know, make things a little tighter or, you know, how structuring things, as you mentioned, that you're taking notes and working through things, that it and I think that's one of the great things about coming together to create a piece of art. So I'd be curious with a reading how that experience is, because I know a lot of casts that I've talked to have said that, you know, that you get really bonded and you get really tight. Maybe I'll have Felicia take the question because she's done a lot of theater, and I'd be curious. So with a reading, you come together at the table.
Right.
The rehearsal time is maybe a little different.
It's kind of truncated.
Yeah.
And that's the only negative to something like this, is that this is such an incredibly talented group of people and such an interesting group of people, but we're not together for a long period of time. So when Christine gets to do this as a full-length play and is able to cast all of us again, then, you know, we'll get to know each other very, very well. But I would say we've only had one real all-cast reading so far, and it's been wonderful. It's been really, really exciting and interesting, and we've got a lot going on, obviously, this coming week. So a week from now, we'll all know each other a lot better than we do today.
Yeah, and that's, I think, a good part, too, is that hoping that this might become a play that gets produced. Everybody's cheering that. I think that would be a real positive thing. So what are your hopes for this play? What is it, where would you like to see it go? Or what has been part of the experience for you that you want to carry through?
For me, it's been something that, like, I want to see performed just kind of everywhere. but, like, I think especially being in the St. Olaf Theater Department, I know that we're always going to have a lot of talent. And, like, I've already kind of, you know, like, in my mind while reading the play, like, done, you know, what my, like, dream casting would be from people in the theater department. And, I really think that, like, it would be good, because one of the things that happens with a lot of the plays, unfortunately, in musicals, is that there are more male roles than there are, like, female roles. And so, like, this would actually be, like, a really fun play to put on, because there's no men that are actually, like, on stage. It's entirely people who are non-binary, genderqueer, or women. Like, so it would be something very different that would give so many more people a little bit more opportunity to just actually show off what they can do rather than, like, having those, like, set theater rules that, like, kind of exist. And, yeah, it would be great if this could become one of the, like, classics a couple hundred years down the road.
It's a different energy,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very different energy. Uh-huh. Like, you get, like, classic plays. Like, I co-directed The Crucible on campus last semester during the fall, and it's a very different experience when you have when you actually have to care, like, about the fact that there's going to be men on stage and they have more lines, and just knowing that that's kind of what theater has been for a fairly long period of time. Because, I mean, it used to be only men were allowed to act on stage, so...
That was definitely true as recently as Shakespeare's time, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like that. And so it's just a, you know, realization that because women and people of other diverse gender identities were shut out so long from that experience, we've got a lot of catching up to do.
I like that attitude, and it makes me think about the possibilities of what stories we get to hear and what, you know, ways that we can expand the world.
Yeah.
That's exciting. Ellie, you want to jump in?
I would just like to see this as a full production. I think
me
that
too.
Yeah, I think that this would be a really good, just kind of refreshing break from all the, like, the last, pretty much all of the last 2 years plays that I've done have all been male dominated, and I don't know, I kind of just want a break. I don't know.
How does it feel, Christine, to hear them hoping, wishing, rooting for your play to, and how would that happen? I guess maybe that's something I'm not even sure what's, you know, so you'll do this production, which is helping to shape and, you know, hone the play, and then what's next?
Well, it's really encouraging. I'm so, you know, very happy to hear that, because, well, no matter what happens with my play, it makes it all worth it if it enriches the lives of the people who, even just the people who are the actors, not to mention the audience. So that, I really thank you guys for that, for all your words of encouragement. And, I don't know. Right now I'm just in this moment and thinking about this particular reading. But I would be very happy to consider when I was writing it, I think of these different scenes that are kind of the meat of it, the scenes that are taking place in these different eras. I'm still feeling like they're kind of sketches for me. Like they're still, like I'm still beginning to explore these characters. Then I have a lot of these other characters are voices that give a chance for other viewpoints to be spoken. And so I was so glad that they were there, because there's so many people that wanted to participate. And so that tells me a lot about the need for large cast plays. A lot of playwrights will not ever write a play for more than seven people, and that's another really, really unfortunate thing in theater. Is it has a lot to do with economics and the fact that theaters are having a rough time of it. Not as many people go to theater as those who are making theater would like. And so the types of productions that are selected, they want to aim towards, you know, a general, in quotations, audience. And we want to be able to compensate professional actors appropriately. And so that's why there has to be a limit, because you have to pay actors, you have to pay technicians, designers, directors, you have your theater spaces and all of the other expenses. So, but there are places that do large cast plays, and one is colleges,
oh yeah,
high schools, and community theaters. So where I would be looking if I was going to look for more.
That's a perspective history. I hadn't heard, and so that's really enlightening to learn that detail. And
so tell your audience to go to live theater. Spend their money on live theater whenever they can.
Please, please do. Yes. Well, and it's such a wonderful experience.
I agree that you can listen or watch a movie, but you don't have that connection that there's something in the air that's invigorating.
If I could just say, just from an actor's perspective, there is nothing. The reason that you do it, yeah, the plays are wonderful, the stories are wonderful, the characters that you inhabit are wonderful. You do become other people, and you get to live a whole lot of different lives, you know, when you're on the stage. But the reason that you do it is this intangible feeling of connection. Mm-hmm. You feel the people in the audience. When something happens on stage that moves people in the audience, you feel that. When people are angry, when they're excited, when they're sad, the audience energy is what gives life to a live production. I mean, the audience is as important as the actors. So it's magical when it comes together.
And so we want you to put on your calendar April 14th at 7:30 or April 15th at 2, Northfield Arts Guild Theater, Women March in Washington preposition?
Yeah, that's a preposition.
Yeah. Either one will work, though.
And Women March on Washington, and you can get your tickets right now, and they're really reasonable, $5. This is a reading of Christine Coleman's new play, Women March on Washington. I'm so excited that you were here in the studio, that you shared your story, that you told us about this, and I really deeply want to thank my guests today. Let's see if I can get them all correct. Ellie, I've got your last name. Where did it go?
Warren.
Ellie Warren. Thank you for being here. Noah Lescher.
Lescher.
I goofed it.
So fine. You got it right the first time.
Okay, that's what counts, right? Felicia Crosby. And, of course, Christine Coleman. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Paula.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Folks, I hope that you find some time over this next week to add some art zany to your life. And as always, in the meantime, until next time, enjoy your imagination.
You've been listening to Art Zany, Radio for the Imagination, with your host, Paula Granquist. Art Zany is brought to you each week by the Northfield Arts Guild and by the Paradise Center for the Arts in Faribault. Spring chills getting you down? Then come to the Paradise Center for the Arts for an amazing April lineup. This Friday, April 6th, Tommy Ryman, voted one of Minnesota's funniest men and a semifinalist on NBC's Last Comic Standing, will make you laugh till your sides hurt with his clever yet disturbingly adorable demeanor. In mid-April, the heartwarming Broadway show Annie takes center stage at the Paradise Community Theater, presents this beloved, award-winning musical. Annie runs April 13th through the 22nd. Spring and music will be in full swing on Saturday, April 28th, as Buddy Koopman's orchestra returns to the Paradise for a night of big band fun and swing music. For more information or for tickets, go to ParadiseCenterOfTheArts.org or call 507-332-7372 or visit the Paradise Center for the Arts box office in historic downtown Faribault.